understand that we have a list compiled of potential goals. They are now up on the board. I'd suggest that we start at the top and work our way through the list. First item is promote sector enrollment as a goal. Any comments? Questions? John Nelson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a process. I didn't see how many we had. Thanks. I don't need to see how many we had. I guess is it your intent that we're providing comments like, yeah, we can live with that, or we hate it, and get a sense of what would then go forward to the committee versus having a lot of discussion about it and not knowing what the heck determination we actually have of whether the committee should continue looking at this particular goal or objective. How are we going to separate it out?
We could either try to look at all 13 and let people pick on number 6 and number 4 and number 19 or 9, or we can go through from the top to the bottom, and if there aren't strenuous objections as we move through the list, then they'll stay and they'll become part of the document, draft document. If there are strenuous objections, we'll stop and have a discussion about it, unless there's another alternative that people want to use to go through this list that's brand new to all of us. John.
When we say put it in the document, my sense was you were trying to get a basic consensus that, yeah, let's move these over to the committee for them to further examine and take the time to see what really is viable, and then come back to the council with a more of a final draft listing?
Yes and no. I'd like to go from the top to the bottom and see how many of them we can accept on their face value. When I say they're going to go to the document, in the draft document, yeah, they'll go back to the committee, and that will be in front of the committee. If they want to continue to add on or take away from things, I would suspect they're going to do that. But I also want them to be there to guide the committee as they continue discussion on these issues.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a good process would be to actually just read through all of them, just so that everybody can see, the ground is covered, and then come back to the first one and do, as you say, add it in without major objection or whether there's some fine-tuning.
Okay. I think that's a good idea. You want to take a moment to just read them all on the board?
Have somebody read it, right? Like Rip.
I was actually going to ask Dr. Pierce if he would, because he's got it right in front of him on his screen, I think, still.
Dr. Pierce, can you indulge us?
Sure, I can. Before I read them, if I may, Mr. Chairman, this is a list that attempts to capture the comments that were made around the table by those who chose to put their oar in the water regarding what are we trying to accomplish through this allocation amendment, drawing on some of the points made by David Gethel and by Jimmy Rule, Tom Hill, Jimmy Odlin, and others. So this is not my list. This is as best we could. Best we could do in about 15 minutes of assembling them. All right, so the first one is promote sector enrollment. I assume, Karen, you didn't excuse me, Karen may have polished these a little bit. So if they didn't, okay. So promote sector enrollment, minimize effort displacement into other fisheries and impacts on common pool, non-sector vessels. Minimize penalties to fishermen whose performance, catch histories, were affected by past and current regulations having geographic effects on catch and fishing opportunities. Take into account, number four, take into account the current investments made by the fishing industry, or the groundfish fishing industry, for example, permit purchases and day at sea leasing. Number five, receive support from the majority of the groundfish fleet. Number six, not allow effort in the common pool to expand. Seven, be consistent with the industry-funded buyout measures of capacity and permit values. Eight, minimize analytical difficulties in determining catch histories for allocation. Nine, establish an allocation system that fairly and equitably distributes quota to participants, recognizing that it is unlikely that any allocation can be 100% acceptable to all participants. To the extent practicable, preserve the current makeup of the fleet, both in size categories and in geographical areas. Provide a mechanism for capacity reduction through consolidation. That's number 11. Number 12 is provide incentive to self-govern. 13, recognize past and present participation and dependence on the fisheries. So that's the 13 that we pasted together that at least gives us, we think, a starting point for discussion.
Okay. Thanks, David. Back to number one. Promote sector enrollment. Any objection? Dave Simpson.
No objection. I was just going to say, as we were talking about this and just before you took the break, it seemed you wanted to back up, and look at what are we trying to accomplish here. And maybe I backed up too far. I don't know. But I was looking at some general things that I think we started to get to in toward 11, 10, 11, 12 there. But, is our sectors the way we want to go to accomplish, the broader objectives? I mean, at one level, you just say anything but days at sea. And I'm hoping that this isn't, anything but days at sea, that this is the best vehicle to carry us years into the future. And so toward that, if you just indulge me, I had been drafting a couple of broader picture, goals that I had in mind, and we can see how people react to them, but and in not any particular order. But to preserve the concept of an owner-operator fishery, to address bycatch issues, to simplify management, to give industry greater control over their own fate, provide a mechanism for economics to shape the fleet rather than regulations, and to prevent excessive consolidation that would eliminate the day boat fishery. So I backed up too far, but I guess I've been listening, asking more, are sectors the way we want to go, or is there something else? And I just didn't want this to be a lifeboat on a sinking ship type of alternative, that this is really the way the council wants to go. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Thanks, Dave. Dana Rice?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments. I don't have any objections to this. I thought this was the goals and objectives that we had when we went down this path. A couple of things have happened, I guess, that maybe is shaken. This is, quite frankly, how we've embraced the sector discussion is a lifeboat on a sinking ship. That's the reason we've all run to it. So I don't have any problem with all of these and the things that David has added here, David suggested here, but this is a lifeboat on a sinking ship for a lot of people. People are embracing sectors because there's some cuts coming, and do we want to try to, for me, I want to try to keep the fishery as open and broad to as many people as possible. I know that can't go back to the days of yore, but if we need to embrace this, let's do it, and let's make it the damn best lifeboat that we possibly can have. And then I'm still a little bit concerned about some flexibility. I feel that I have to make these comments, Mr. Chairman. I'm not being negative at all, but this is a pretty important conversation here. There's some things coming, and some people are going to. Some of the people that are hanging on by a thread today aren't going to be around when this is implemented. And I think, we all want to protect the resource, but this is about people and their livelihoods. And I guess I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else on the council? Jim Otham.
Just a couple of questions. And, a lot of people had input onto this. Is that, what is taken into account current investments made by the industry? Does that mean we have to guarantee somebody that the price they paid for a permit yesterday is going to be the price it's worth tomorrow after we do this? Does that mean, some people come up and say, well, I paid $100,000 for a permit, and you got to take that into account. But what does that mean? We have to put something to it. I don't get that one. There's one there. Take them in order. Okay. Receive support of the majority of the groundfish fleet. That's a broad statement. Does that mean we're going to do a referendum, for instance, to find out if we've got we have majority support of the groundfish fleet? So, and then there's a couple of items in there that I'm worried about. Be consistent with the industry-funded buyout measures of capacity and permit values. We don't have some people are supporting an industry-funded buyback, but there's no industry-funded buyback on the table that I know about. I mean, that's going to happen. That's sure to happen. So why are we tying ourselves to something that may or may not happen, tying our hands to a formula that may or may not happen? So I think we're getting too specific, and we should be more broad-based in our goals and objectives, because some of them are immeasurable.
All right, thanks, Jim. Sally?
I like the ideas that Dave Simpson put forward. I think taking a broader view is much more realistic, partly because of what Jim Odlin just said. Bullet number 3, I think, is entirely unrealistic, and while I think it's important to consider the makeup of the fleet and the small boat fleet and how they may be impacted differently by regulations that have geographic effects, I don't see how that can be measured at all. I do think that the broader view can take those kinds of considerations into account. As far as being consistent with the industry-funded buyout measures, I am admittedly baffled as to why we're considering that right now, understanding that the idea of a buyout has resurfaced in recent weeks, but that's been tabled for now, and I think that just complicates things right now to be not only considering a buyout concurrently with our efforts here through sectors to give industry actually a means to consolidate on their own terms, and communities to consider how to consolidate on their own terms and whether they actually want to keep fishing a part of a local economy, that it just complicates things, I think, way too much. And then lastly, the bullet that says, to the extent practicable, preserve the current makeup of the fleet and size and geography. My understanding of sectors is that gives that issue entirely over to fishing communities and takes it out of the hands of the council, which is, I think, one of the problems that this council has had to deal with, is the social engineering that is more appropriate at the community level and that sectors actually give to communities to figure out where there can be viable fishing fleets and how those fleets can be configured in a way that is sustainable in both ecological and economic terms. So I think that that one needs to be eliminated entirely, and would suggest that I'd be interested to hear others discuss the suggestion put forward by Dave Simpson. Thank you.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Sally has made some excellent points. Certainly one of the ones that I guess concerns me is it's number seven on the industry-funded buyout. And the buyout is something that is totally out of the control of the council and outside the council process. And so I think that, you know, tying something to that when we don't have any sort of control over it is problematic. So I'd go for eliminating that one.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Dave Simpson and thoroughly agree with Jim Odlin and Sally McGee. I think that the list is too constraining, and I think we're right back into micromanaging here with this list. A good example is number six, not allow effort in the common pool to expand. That's micromanaging. That's a business that if the business goes that way, if a sector breaks up, then it is going to expand. And I don't think we need to say we're not going to allow it. That's putting us under another micromanagement. And so I would definitely be against that one. We could say if you wanted to go with it, something like encourage it not to expand, but to say we're not going to allow it to expand, that's right back to micromanaging.
Anyone else in the council? Dr. Pierce.
Hey, just a couple of points regarding the not allowing effort in the common pool to expand. There may be a better way to phrase that. However, I think the concern is still there, and we need to address it as part of our overall objective, and that is to respond to the likely problem that was described by Tom in his earlier report, and that is common pool vessels will have a potentially very large days at sea pool that they'll be using, but no, you know, it's not going to be matched well with the groundfish allocation that it will have. There are a number of other associated problems with that availability of days at sea to the common pool. And frankly, if we're going to promote sector enrollment, I think we are. I think that any promotion of sectors, the growing of sectors, will have an impact on the common pool. That is, it will diminish dramatically. So I would hate to see our going in two different directions, that is promoting sectors, the growth of sectors, enrollment in sectors, and at the same time not dealing with the common pool vessels that are still there and capable of putting in a lot of effort on groundfish with their days at sea. And then my other point is, and it's relative to what David Simpson said, and I agree with him, it's a very legitimate concern, and it fits in rather well with an objective, but I'm not exactly sure how to word it. And that is, he said, to prevent excessive consolidation. That's true. We really haven't talked about consolidation and what our goal is relative to that. To what extent do we promote, allow consolidation so that we end up with, well, the potentially, I suppose, with the ACLs being in the hands of a relative few? Will we end up with some communities falling by the wayside because of the way in which consolidation occurs? Situate, Green Harbor, Plymouth, Provincetown, all the small ports, will they vanish because of consolidation that will occur? Obviously, if we have an objective that relates to preventing excessive consolidation, we have to define what excessive means, but that's why I say I haven't got anything to offer up at this point in time regarding consolidation, except to say that I'm concerned about it and the potential impacts of unrestrained consolidation on all the small coastal communities, the smaller ports that might find themselves hard-pressed. I might be wrong. Maybe they wouldn't find themselves hard-pressed, but I would like to see eventually some analysis in the context of an objective that would focus on, you know, what likely will happen with consolidation, depending upon the alternatives that, you know, that we will choose as to how we are going to allocate the resource.
Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make one more stab at it. I don't disagree with any of the things that are being said here, but sort of what's puzzling me here today. We're here today talking about sectors. We all wanted to go to sectors, or I think we've tried to get sectors in place because we realized that there are some cuts coming where there are people going to go out of the fishery, the fleet is going to consolidate. We are, as far as I'm concerned in this whole process, I'm trying to avoid that as much as possible, to leave as many people in place, communities, areas, big boats, little boats, everybody in place. But what's confusing me here now is I want to pursue this, but can somebody help me? Mr. Chairman, maybe you can help me with this. If we pursue this today and bring in all of these other suggestions and get the objectives real clear and send it back to the committee, is it going to do us any good? Time-wise, 2009, something's going to happen. I want to pursue it, but I'm a little bit... I'm afraid some people are going to go away in the next year and a half or so here. I'm afraid there's going to be some cut in the fisheries or whatever if we have something in place. People are grasping at sectors to try to be still fishing. They think, some groups are hoping that we can get into a sector and hang on a little while longer until fish stocks come back or it provides a mechanism to distribute the catch effort and keep us alive. And that's sort of what's behind this, but I'm sort of getting the message that we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. I want to pursue this, but I think there's... Who's going to be here around... let me ask the point blunt question. Of all the people that have permits today... And they're on hanging on by a thread. Maybe another year they can hang on. Are they going to be around long enough to benefit by this? Is there a cut coming here or whatever? That's a question that I need to ask. Maybe there's no answer to it. But if you can, Mr. Chairman, please.
Who's in and who's out? Right? Isn't that what the dance is all about right here? Well, and that's why I wanted to drive the council to have this discussion, this particular discussion. Now, I think you're right. I think a lot of people are gravitating to sectors because they view it as has been termed a lifeboat on a sinking ship. And a lot of people are concerned about what's going to come out of the GARM. And for whatever reason, even though we don't have any official indication, everybody's got a pretty long face when they talk about the GARM. The GARM's going to be disastrous. The GARM's going to force more cuts, deeper cuts. People are going to go out of business. So without having any information, people intuitively sense that the GARM is going to not deliver good news and that the past, 6 years of this management plan haven't rebuilt things quick enough. We're not on target for rebuilding. Even though there's no information to indicate that we are or aren't. You asked a lot of questions there and in a lot of different ways. You wanted to know, I think, is this a waste of time? Is it going to matter? Well, if we keep having this discussion at the council, sectors are in, sectors are out, sectors are in. Area management's in, now area management's out. Points is in, points is out. And I think in the back of a lot of people's minds is the GARM and the required adjustments for 2009. And as I already said, a lot of people don't think it's going to be good news. sectors are here. The council made a decision to put them in. Probably for some people, the reason they wanted sectors in was to provide that lifeboat. Also, I think there's a frustration over what can we do with days at sea right now, absent guidelines and ACLs and AMs, absent information on the GARM. You know, what else is the council going to do? You know, we've gotten advice from the plan development team, and Tom can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's problematic to ask the plan development team to analyze 75 different permutations of what may or may not happen in the GARM results. Yet we still have to have something ready to go. We've gotten a letter from the regional administrator, and we've gotten signals from the National Marine Fisheries Service that we're slipping on our timeline, and that at some point we may lose the resources we need at the plan development team level and the resources that we depend on out of the Science Center, because they're going to have to make a determination that we can't get it done and that they're going to have to go off and prepare something to meet the letter of the law. So, I mean, I think I've summed up where we are right now. So is this a waste of time? I don't think it is. I think if we're going to stick to the decision we made, which is we're going to put sectors in the amendment, we need to be clear how we arrived at the allocation alternative, which is the foundation of sector management. If you look at Amendment 13, we didn't really do that. We don't have a clear set of goals as to how we arrived at it. I can tell you how we arrived at the specific 96-01. It was based on the days at sea that were allocated in Amendment 13, the same time period. Is that or is that not still appropriate? That's a debate that the council hasn't even had. But I think we've got to start at what are the goals of picking the alternative or the foundation for sector management. Sector management, this council has decided to put into this document and to keep working on. Maybe we don't want to talk about days at sea cuts and increases to differential areas or increases to differential counting, lowering of trip limits, closures of areas, all the things that we fear we might have to do. Or somebody might have to do. It's not a waste of time to continue doing this. That's what this day is about. And as far as your other question, your last one, I plead the fifth. I don't know who's going to be here and who's not going to be here. But like you, Dana, I'd like to see as many people as possible stay. And to the specific, my opinion on the specific points on the board, they're all valid. But they may not be the high-altitude goals that I was thinking about. They may be things that you consider when you look at specific alternatives, but they may not be the overarching guidance that I was thinking about when I raised this issue this morning. Jim Odlin, then John Nelson.
Well, back to the specific proposals. One of the ones that I helped put in there was to the extent practical, preserve the current makeup of the fleet, both in size categories and geographical areas. And I want to explain why I thought that was important. And the reason I think that's important, because you could have two alternatives in front of you. One shifts the allocation to the big boats. One shifts it to the small boats. Or one shifts it from Maine, and the other one shifts it to Massachusetts. And I think that we ought not be doing that. I think we ought to let that may happen and may not happen in the formation of sectors, but we ought to not be directing it to happen, so that if you try to use it, say, well, we'd like to keep the makeup of the fleet, although there be maybe less people, at least the makeup will be percentage-wise kind of the same as it is today, and we'd like to keep the geographical area the same as it is today and not make specific decisions on moving that around. And so that's the reason I put that in there. I thought that was quite important. We can't control what happens, but we can make things happen. And we can make, through an allocation, there only be big boats left, or there only be small boats left, or there only be mid-sized boats left. So if you try to avoid that in your thought process, then you can start somewhere. You can start saying we'd like to keep things relatively the same, although it may be smaller, but relatively the same. Things will happen that are out of our control if permits get sold and things go. But I don't want to be in a position where I have to say, okay, I'm going to pick this one for the reason that it's moving everything over here, or vice versa. So that's the reason, trying to keep things on a more or less even keel, and that's why I thought that was important to be in there.
Who did I have next? Dave Gaethel, did you have your hand up?
I did, but I think you had John next.
John Nelson, then Frank Blount.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it's really worth wordsmithing too much here. I mean, we've gone around the table right now, and you've got, I think, the Ground Fish Committee has heard that some people favor certain ones, that others don't favor others. I think there's some that can be consolidated, that type of thing. We've also heard about probably some additional ones that are a little bit broader, which I certainly can support. And I think that the source for those broader ones are actually in the policy that we've already adopted. And I think the Groundfish Committee should have that, because in a number of areas, the policy says to the committee that's considering the sector, consider such and such. Consider these points when you're considering. So look at how to minimize bycatch. Those are things that are already listed in there. I think those are the objectives that we are still concerned about. So I'd like to make sure that the Groundfish Committee takes a look at that document, as well as these objectives that we have on the screen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. Frank Blount.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned on a few of these, and one, as Jimmy Odlin said, on the economic, I'm not quite sure what that means. And I think it was number four, if we can scroll up. maybe it's number three. The geographic areas, because I'm not quite sure. We know the rolling closures had a very big impact on the inshore boats, but we also know that U.S.-Canada had an impact on the boats fishing to the east. We know that closing the Nantucket Lightship area had boats an impact on boats from southern New England. So how you combine all those to say what the impact was, I'm not quite sure how you do that. So I think that's a very difficult one to take into consideration. I do like Dave Simpson's approach. I thought it was much simpler and much clearer. And also, I think something else needs to be said. You know, we are building lifeboats here, but we're still on the Titanic. When you get done, if we don't know what the GARM's going to say. If the GARM says it needs a 50% cut, and I'm just making that number up, you're still going to need a 50% cut. So whether or not you're in the sector is also going to need that cut. So we still have the same number of fish that can be caught. And your annual catch limit is going to be the same. The fact that you're in a sector, you're not getting any more fish. You may be able to manage that sector better on your own. You may be able to, you know, move around and do some other things and not be bound by days at sea or whatever. But the bottom line is there aren't any more fish. And I think people are being led into a false sense of security that if I'm in a sector, I'm going to be okay. That may be the case. But because you're in a sector, it doesn't mean you're going to have any more fish to catch. It might mean you don't have days at sea, or you might have different restrictions. But the bottom line may not be any different. And I think that's something that people are starting to lose sight of.
That's a good comment. Thanks, Frank. Rodney?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say Frank just summed it up the best of all here today. That was the best one, Frank. He let the people know what they want to hear. And that's what they want to hear, the truth, and he just put it out there.
Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a good discussion. But listening to Dana and actually to Jim Rule earlier has highlighted some of the issues that have been haunting me. It's just been suggested that the Groundfish Committee take a look at these priorities. I mean, we've made a lot of progress in the Groundfish Committee, but our list of tasks is growing, not shrinking. The new proposal, which I'm assuming is going to be voted to be considered, will be brought before the committee and the PDT. That adds to the workload. And Pat's letter has been pretty clear. I'm concerned that we're not rushing to implement a new plan that may make us in a little bit worse shape than we are right now. And I'm concerned about the resource issues and getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, from my understanding, the groundfish committee meeting we have before the February meeting is specifically to deal with days at sea adjustments. It's something we have to do. So I hope we can go through all the issues that we need to about sectors this afternoon and then focus on really what's here at hand, which is addressing the Emergency Action Amendment 16.
Dave and then Jim.
Yeah, I just want to go back to number 7 because I think there was a misunderstanding of what that says. What it is to produce, to avoid having the Groundfish Committee having to come up with its own measures of capacity and permit values. In other words, widely respected group spent 2 years trying to determine how to determine capacity, and that was the industry-funded buyout group. And it doesn't imply that there's an industry buyout. It doesn't have anything to do with an industry buyout other than using their formula if we're going to enter into capacity discussions as part of one of these motions. It's just simply a formula that's out there that was agreed to by a wide range of people.
Jim Adler.
Yeah, just one comment about, we're on the Titanic. I agree. Even if the GARM comes out by some miracle and says we're on track, the industry can't last in its present form. It can't last past 2009 the way it is today. So we have to have something like this, irregardless of what the GARM does, unless it comes back and says, oh, you're way over track and we can start increasing effort, but I think that would be highly unlikely. But the industry can't survive what it's in right now at all. That needs to be stated. It won't last past 2009. I think probably everybody in the room can tell you that. So we need something to allow people a mechanism to become more efficient again and utilize the same amount of fish but in an efficient manner.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's somewhat ironic. I think Jimmy's right. The industry, and it's not just the industry, the groundfish industry. It's the entire fishing industry on the East Coast. And it's got nothing to do with fisheries management right now. It's all to do with fuel. The fuel has gone up $1 a gallon since we started talking about this. And don't you think that doesn't have a major effect on the entire industry across the board? It's a major player. It's got nothing to do with what goes on at this table, but it will, in fact, have quite a result. But the comment I was going to make, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at, what the charge was from the council back to the committee. And I'm looking at the motion. The only motion in the November council meeting that had the word sector in it was number 6 on the last page of the motions. And the motion clearly stated that the council include in Amendment 16 an alternative for, no, I'm sorry, wrong page. The last, it was 9A. The council directed the Groundfish Committee to continue work on days at sea modifications, recreational measures, ACLAM processes, and sector management for Amendment 16. That was what the council put back to the committee in November. And a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of people are walking away with the expectation that the committee was going to meet and develop some of the options that it has and come forward as a mandated requirement to be in 16. And I think back to the fundamental question that needs to be asked as we develop this list for the Groundfish Committee, just ask the simple question, is this possible? Is there any potential that this can be implemented in 2009, not negatively affecting Amendment 16's required actions? Is it? I don't want to make it sound like we don't want to keep working on it, but I don't want to create the false expectations that sooner or later this hammer's going to fall and people need to know it. I really would like to see a little more discussion, Mr. Chairman, on that specific issue. Maybe comments. We haven't heard anything from the regional administrator. Just pretty much know what it's going to be, but it still needs to be stated. And that's exactly what the motion that the council passed in November said. And to my knowledge, that is the only time in the entire meeting that sectors was in the form of a motion, that very last motion. And I don't know that I'd call and sector management for Amendment 16 a complete roadmap as you have to do this and you have to implement it in 2009. That's not what I take out of it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Well, I think you go to the letter that the regional administrator provided the council. She's sitting here, so she can correct me if I'm wrong, but it does say that if you want to get sectors approved in this amendment, here's some of the things that we're concerned about and some of the things you need to do. But it also says that there's no guarantee that they'll be implemented May 1, 2009. I'm pretty sure everyone at this table has either heard of the letter or read it themselves. And I'm not sure if it's available on the table outside. It is? Okay. It's pretty clearly laid out by the regional administrator. The timeline we're on, all the other things we have to talk about sectors, not just the allocation, but concerning sectors, there's a lot of other issues we have to talk about. And then there's recreational issues, ACLs, accountability measures that are required. With that issue, there's the catch of groundfish and other fisheries that are not groundfish fisheries, but to have a bycatch of groundfish. I mean, there's a lot of other things that we need to account for. So you're asking me if I think we can still get sectors done. I can answer that question better after today. And if the regional administrator wants to say anything.
Pat? Yeah, I've been quiet because, I don't want people to misunderstand why I haven't said anything, so that's why I'm talking now. But I've been quiet because I think I was very clear at the November council meeting with that motion passed where I was coming from and took a very strong position against the motion. And then since then, of course, we have provided the letter laying out what we think would help. We're trying to be constructive, but as John pointing out that there's still no guarantee that we could make it by May 1st, 2009. And so my position on all this hasn't changed any. So I didn't want to make that clear, but I also see the agenda for this particular meeting and didn't think it was the time to sort of rediscuss my concerns. But they're still there. I still think our highest priority should be the midterm adjustment. I want to make very clear that I support sectors, I support limited access privilege type programs, the agency does, the region does. We were very strong supporters of providing sector opportunities in Amendment 13 and in the discussions about providing it in other FMPs. It doesn't have anything to do with lack of support for moving in that direction. It's more a comment on what I think the reality of the situation is in front of us right now.
John Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my sense of all of this is that we're not going to say, let's stop this instant on sectors. So therefore, if we're not going to do that, we should move ahead. You've given direction to I think the council's given direction via thoughts on these objectives. We've offered other areas for them to get objectives. I think they ought to move forward to the committee for them to evaluate that. I think as far as the timing of when sectors can go into place, I think we ought to have that discussion. Pat has already outlined it in her letter and her concerns. We're trying to address, I think, as much of that as possible so that we can have a process in place that's more fleshed out than what we have right now that will allow for sectors to occur. Whether it's 09 or whether it's 10, I don't know. But that would play out over time after you get the process in place. So I don't think we ought to spend the time revisiting what our intent was. That's why we're having this meeting, is to pursue that intent. And I think we ought to just move this over to the committee and start tackling the next issue, whether it's the timing or whatever else. And I've already stated what I think about the timing. and keep this process moving as best we can. And I'll stop at that, but at some point, Mr. Chairman, after we get done with this, we do need to go back to the alternatives and discuss the broadening of the alternatives to reflect, at least in part, the some of the objectives that we have there.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sort of have a number of thoughts. One, since we were on the discussion of whether it's going to be 2009 or 2010, certainly, again, for those who have read the services letter, I think it's quite evident that even if, and the committee has said, we still want to push forward for 2009, I think it's quite evident that it's going to be 2010. That in itself brings up a number of issues that I think impact the people who are in fact trying to put together the sectors. I mean, some decision has to be made by them as to whether they are going to pull together their sector plans and submit them and hope that in fact something is implemented as close to the beginning of the fishing year in 2009 as possible. If it doesn't, and it doesn't occur till the beginning of the beginning of the fishing year in 2010, you've got a whole group of people who have committed to sectors who aren't going to be fishing that year. So that is something for them to consider. I think that, you know, if we're honest with the industry and look at the timeline and the administrative issues that we're faced with, people are going to have to see that it's not going to be until the first of the fishing year in 2010. And I wonder, and I'm just wondering out loud, how this impacts the ability of people to pull people into the sectors in the first place. To me, it almost is a real blow to the effort of trying to pull together sectors. From a timeline consideration, the fact that we would take today and remand things back to the Ground Fish Committee and perhaps come up, you know, with either new or additional alternatives that come back. I sit here, I expressed my concern a long time ago. I'm as concerned as I was before, maybe more so, of our ability to meet that. But I know that when we load more back onto the committee, and it's not just the committee. The committee has the capability of meeting a lot more often than we do. The problem is that we'll come up with things that need to be analyzed or looked at by the PDT, and then there's the ability for the PDT to meet and what their time frame is. So I think Terry Stockwell's comment was right on the point. You know, we have made substantial progress on this, but our list is not getting shorter. Our list, every time we meet, gets longer. And I continue to be concerned. I was concerned at our last committee meeting. I tried to ask some questions of the service, and I wasn't trying to, you know, they were pointed questions as to, you know, what is going to trigger us losing the PDT support, because the service is going to have to take that support to begin to work on an emergency action. Essentially, it comes down to are we on our timeline? And I can assure you that the more that we request of the committee to get some of the stuff done, the bigger the chances that we're going to fall behind on that timeline, and then that's going to trigger the PDT problem. So I mean, I understand what John Nelson is saying. On the other hand, I think that Jim Rule has made some very good points. You know, if we can sit here today, and I'm not real good at reading tea leaves, but I have this overriding concern, and if that is something that a number of people see and are honest about it, I think we make a big mistake of continuing to promise to be able to get this done to the industry, because the industry is going to count on it, and somehow we're going to fail on it, and you know, that's, we're going to be in the back in the position of an emergency action, and I don't want to be there, but I think we need to take a hard look at it, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're here today, too, besides, you know, going through some of these allocation issues.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that, to just put it even more bluntly, if we don't make an allocation decision today, then we aren't going to be in a position, industry isn't going to be in a position to be online by 2009, and it's evident that we're not going to be able to make an allocation decision today. So that's just putting two and two together. I still don't think that we need to have a motion that we're going to delay this till 2010. We're going to continue working on it. Industry can see what's happening. I don't think it's our prerogative to say, well, no, we're not going to allow you to do this until 2010. They can see this. You don't have to be able to read too many tea leaves to see that. I just don't see that absent a fairly firm decision on where we're going with allocation that we're going to meet the timelines. The timelines are very strict, and everybody knows that. There's no Pollyannas here. We know what the deal is, and the industry does too. I think it's time to just move on. Let's move on and get some of this done.
Okay, Dave Simpson read my mind. I was going to ask him to give Karen his 4 or 5 points. Hopefully she can tack those on to the end of the list. And I'd like to return back to the allocation motion that came out of the committee once Karen puts those up and we have a chance to look at them. Paul Howard.
On number two, I've always been bothered by, you know, we have a groundfish committee, and we're going to task them with protecting other fisheries or minimizing the effort into other fisheries. I think that's a lot more than what we could ever do. I think that the groundfish committee should worry about the groundfish problems, and that each particular fishery should worry about its own capacity and its own effort controls, and that that number two is beyond the means of having one committee try to protect every other fishery. Each fishery should protect its own interests, worry about its capacity and its own rules.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rip's comments about sending this back to the committee and all the time it would take, and I can appreciate that, and I understand that. And I think my intent to have a discussion about the goals and the objectives before dealing with the alternatives is to get some clarity over what it is we really want to try to do. I think the discussion around the table has helped do that. But I think it's still important to delineate what those are, and I don't know. I'm not sure whether, given our agenda and what we've told the public we're going to decide today, whether we could vote on these now and say these are the objectives for the amendment. I don't think you can, but I think what we can do is go through that list and say what I would like to see accomplished is we go through the list and say 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9 are what we're going to tell the committee to consider, and that if they have some
reason why something else should be added to that, they bring that back to us. But it brings us progressively along the way. It doesn't leave it up to the committee to just sit down and start groping with these ideas again. It says these are what we now think are important, and they're part and parcel of the package that's going to come forward for all approval later. So it doesn't put us behind, but it doesn't also just leave it up to the committee wide open to come back and tell us what they think next. I think we're trying to give the committee some more guidance. And so with that in mind, I will offer a motion, and I will leave it up to you to decide whether the motion is in order. But I would move that items 1, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 be remanded to the committee as the tentative objectives for the alternative, Amendment 16, is that what we're on? As a committee, as tentative objectives for alternative, it's for Amendment 16. Tentative objectives for Amendment 16, you don't need alternatives.
Did you say alternative one as well, or item number one
item
as well?
1, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. And I would suggest that if that motion is deemed in order, that we just, if people could amend or change it if they don't like the numbers, but we would come up with ultimately a set of numbers to be remanded to the committee as the objectives, and they can work on that and deal with it. This way we don't go behind. Thank you.
Karen, can you print these somehow over lunch or now, real quickly now, so that they have them all in front of them?
All right. I think the motion is in order. I'd like to narrow down some of the options we have. Is that a second, Jim? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Karen, you will be able to print them out. Thank you. Dr. Pierce.
I'd move to amend by adding numbers 2 and 4.
We're off to a... Is there a second? And then I'm going to stop the discussion until we have them in front of us. Is there a second? Seconded by John Nelson. All right. We don't have these in front of us right now. It's really difficult to scroll up and down the screen. So I'm going to go to Tom Neese, and then we're going to come back and deal with this after lunch. Tom.
I just wonder if the motion should be clarified a little bit. As worded, it implies that these are the objectives for all of Amendment 16. And I think really what they're intended is to be the objectives for the way we determine whether you call it permit history or the potential sector contribution. So maybe we want to add, you know, rather than a tentative objectives for Amendment 16, say tentative objectives for determining the potential sector contributions in Amendment 16 or through Amendment 16. We can wordsmith it later.
To the maker and the seconder, is your intent for sectors? This applies to sectors. Okay. All right, before we get into a debate on number 2, number 4, number 1, number 8 through 13, I'm going to call a lunch break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll have copies of these items. It is 20 of 1. Everybody back here at 2 o'clock. Mystic. And we did have motions on the board, and we had a motion to tentatively approve, and we had a motion to amend, and... If Karen could put the motions back up that we left. Okay. So We're on the motion to amend. Motion 1E. Essentially, one way to look at it is number 3 and number 5 would be left out if you support amendment, the amendment to the motion. Jim Salisbury.
I think that subverts the process in that if you voted, the amendment was to add 2 and 4, and it seems to me you would vote on whether to add those 2 or 4 to the amendment, not to put them in and then say they all go. So I think you should add just to vote on whether you're adding 2 and 4.
You're correct. Thank you. Karen, if you could change the motion to amend to just say add item 2 and item 4. Discussion. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. Are we going to add, you know, are we going to just make amendments to add things back in one at a time, or are we going to have like an omnibus add-in amendment, or how are we going to do this? I mean, we could sit here and you know, start throwing combinations of numbers up here for the rest of the afternoon.
Let's deal with this amendment, and then it'll become the main motion as amended, and then if you want to amend the motion as amended. Okay. To the motion to amend, Jim? Okay.
Yes, I'm opposed to adding 2 and 4. And the reason being is I don't know how we can accomplish impacts on other fisheries and measure those impacts on other fisheries, as Paul mentioned. For instance, if a guy enters into a sector, but he goes shrimp fishing part of the year, now what are we going to do? Go in and measure his participation in the shrimp fisheries and limit his participation in that fisheries to his past participation or his past effort into that? I don't know how we can accomplish it. And how do we affect other fisheries? So that's the reason I'm opposed to number 2. Number 4 is I don't know how we take into account current investments made by the industry. I don't know how we measure those investments. I don't know, you know, how we protect or what we're trying to do there. So I think they're impossible goals to achieve and measure. So I'm opposed to those 2.
John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to hearken back again to the policy that we've already adopted, and I'm not going to restate it as that's something that should go to the Groundfish Committee, because reality is they already have that. It was mandated to them earlier when we adopted it. I think one of those points that was in the policy was to consider displacement to other fisheries, and I could be corrected, but I believe that was one of the areas that we adopted already. So we may have already done that. And again, as far as moving this discussion, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we use your approach of taking for and against, and then once you feel like they've been properly addressed, let's just call the question on these things. So having still had the floor, and I'll speak for, I think we already have 2 already in there, so therefore it's not inappropriate to again support it. Number 4, I think you're just saying try to take into account what's already happened out there. And I think we're doing that through Days at Sea consideration, as far as if you were going to select that formula, then you've taken that into consideration. If people have bought additional permits, to get more Days at Sea currency, if you would. And if you select the Days at Sea combination with historic landings, to me, you've taken that into account, if that was your intent.
Anyone wishing to speak against? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, John, for trying to explain number four. But I still don't understand how we're going to accomplish that goal, and for that reason, I'm going to vote against the amendment.
Four. Dr. Pierce.
Well, these are my two pet objectives, so if they're voted down, they're voted down, but it's certainly going to affect my long-term approach towards how I deal with sectors. I'm obviously in favor of it, and for those who would like to remove them because they feel that you can't measure them, how do you do it? We'll take a look at number nine. Establish allocation system that fairly and equitably distributes quota to participants. That better come out as well with a motion to amend later on, since that's pretty pretty difficult to measure to determine.
Against? Sally?
I oppose the motion. I think that we need to be thinking in terms of getting down in the weeds or giving clear but more general guidance to the committee that was outlined by Dave Simpson. And I would suggest that rather than going through one by one in all of these very specific proposals, that we should go back and be considering the list that is at the bottom of the sheet that we all received after lunch and have that serve as the guidance and objectives for sectors in Amendment 16, rather than trying to micromanage the fishery, which everybody says is what we do all the time anyway, and shouldn't we just stop and get on with it, give the direction back to the committee that the committee needs, and spend the rest of this afternoon getting back on the agenda and talking about which of the allocation alternatives the council wants to indicate as a preferred so that industry has an idea about what direction the council is going to go. Because we're all, everybody's sitting here kind of hedging their bets on which direction the council is going to go. And I think it's the duty of the council today to give some very clear direction. We've been squishy on this for months and months and months. So I think we need to give the more general guidance in terms of objectives that are outlined at the bottom of the sheet, not be going down into the weeds, into the details here, and including those specifically in the motion to amend items number 2 and 4, and then get back to the discussion of allocation alternatives.
Anyone else wishing to speak for the motion to amend? Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand on the motion to amend. I've got four. Against? Eleven against. The motion to amend fails. Back on the main motion. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to substitute. I'd like to substitute the five goals that David Simpson brought out at the bottom for the motion that's on the table.
Second. Motion to substitute has been made by Dave Preble, seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion on the motion to substitute, Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that the goals, as addressed by Dave Simpson, are good goals to keep in mind, and they strike me more as the goals for the overall amendment, that this is the reason why you're doing the amendment, and they should certainly be included in the amendment document. But the objectives here are designed to try to give guidance as to why we are choosing the actual measures that you're going to choose, the alternatives that are then brought up as measures. So I don't think those goals give us enough specific guidance to get into addressing the measures. They seem to be the overall guidance of why you're doing the amendment in the first place, and I think they're great. And so I would think that they should be incorporated, but they don't seem to me to be getting us into the process of getting towards the specifics, and the specifics are the alternatives that were brought up earlier today, the three alternatives that we have on the floor. So the main motion, the original motion, is talking about how you how you give guidance to get to those specific alternatives and why you're choosing them. So while I don't argue against Dave's things, I just don't think that they are they are part of the overall guidance, but they're the guidance that gets you to the objectives, and then the objectives get you to the alternatives. Thank you.
Okay, in favor? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Even though a number of the ones in the list that would be eliminated were ones that I put on there, I think that having had a chance to look at what Dave Simpson came up with, I think that his do several things. One, since they are global, they cover a lot more ground with fewer individual goals. And all of these are going to have to be, the alternatives are going to be have to be looked at in light of the goals. So by simplifying some of that, I think it's going to be a better process. In looking at it, I'm not going to try and change it. I have a little bit of concern that four says sort of let the economics shape the fleet. Five says, you know, we're going to do some level of management that would shape the fleet. That's my only concern. But I would definitely support it.
Someone wishing to speak against? Dave Pierce.
Well, I think we got into this discussion initially earlier this morning after Tom Meese's presentation regarding the need for objectives so that the plan development team would be able to better evaluate the alternatives that we would be bringing to them for evaluation. Tom can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see these goals. They're good goals. I mean, yeah, I agree that they're very useful. They make sense, but at the same time, I don't think they're going to make the plan development team's job any easier. Therefore, why adopt them as objectives, well, goals, for the plan development team to use? I don't see how it'll be of use.
Someone wishing to speak in favor?
I think the wording that's on the board is not correct. If I understand the motion, it was to substitute the five goals for the previous motion, which was a list of not alternatives, but the way I read that, it would mean that it would be the actual alternatives that we had up, the three alternatives, and that's not what we're substituting it for.
Well, the three alternatives aren't on the board for debate, so they can't be substituted. But
so
I understand
specifically
what
meaning it's meaning replacing those eight or whatever number. The
right. Okay. Someone wishing to speak for. Dave Prepp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been my experience that words can be like snakes, and you can get bitten very easily. And on these 13, many of them are appear to be desirable, but what they do in toto is to constrain the PDT and force the PDT to evaluate all of the objectives on all 13 of these issues. And I see that as being a very problematic and adding to the PDT's job in a way that that smacks of, as Sally said, of more micromanagement. And that's what we're supposed to be trying to get away from. So I think that Dave Simpson was spot on with what he said, and I think that we need general goals that give us guidance. I don't think we need to be to have a list of exactly what we should be measuring everything by. So that's the reason behind it anyway.
Against? Okay, ready for the question on the motion to substitute? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen in favor, opposed. Two opposed. The motion to substitute carries. Now we're on the, what do we call that? The main motion is substituted? Or the substitute main motion? Where's Gene when you need him? Any further discussion? Paul Howard.
I hope this doesn't complicate things, but I remember, you know, folks kind of interchange goals and objectives, and you shouldn't interchange and say a goal is an objective is a goal. A goal is very broad, and objectives are action items that support that goal to achieve that goal and are measurable. So your goals are broad, your objectives are measurable to achieve that specific goal. So you'd have five goals, and you may have three objectives under each goal that are measurable to help you achieve that goal. That's how we used to do it in the Coast Guard.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for, I guess, for a point of clarification, what we're doing here basically suggests that we're establishing goals for Amendment 16. Aren't there required actions in 16 that came out of 13 to meet the midterm review? Are they necessary? Aren't they in place somewhere? Wouldn't we be adding to the goals and objectives to meet those requirements? That was initially what 16 was about. Is it worth the time to put some words up or to suggest that this is a continuation or an addition to the existing goals and objectives of 16? Just curious how you would want to deal with that, Mr. Chairman.
Good question, Jim. I think for your benefit and the benefit of the audience and the council, these are specific to sector allocation decision, not to the amendment at large. Okay, any further questions on the substituted main motion? Dave Preble.
Thank you. That he's absolutely right. And I would suggest, where is it? I would suggest putting in just one word, to substitute the five allocation goals, if that's okay with the seconder.
Yeah, you have to amend it. We already voted on this. But we debated it under the context of goals for the sector allocation decision or discussion. Okay, anything further from the council? John Nelson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think you've already clarified, and it's in the record, of what these goals are directed towards. So as long as that's clear to everybody that it's directed towards the sector development, and then it's not the goals of necessarily the goals of Amendment 16. I think that helps clarify what is intended here.
That's correct. Anything further? Tom Neese.
I was all right until John clarified for the record. Now I'm a little confused. Are these goals specific to the issue of potential sector contributions or to sectors as a whole? And John just said these goals are specific to sector development. Well, I mean, I thought these were specific to the allocation decision.
They're specific to the potential sector contribution discussion and decision. We have a guiding sector policy as well, which is much broader than this. Everyone clear? Okay. Dave Gaethel, you did have your hand up.
Yeah, this is just a question. I understand what we're voting on and everything, but to Paul's point, we have a list of goals here now that we're potentially going to vote out that are suitably broad to be goals. But a lot of the things in the list of 13 were objectives. They were designed to be actionable items. So are we going to go back then and develop a list of actionable items, or are we just going to leave that to the Groundfish Committee? Or what's the next step after this? Because my support for this is contingent on knowing basically what we're doing next.
Well, I plan on going after we dispense with this. I plan on going back to the motion out of the committee, the allocation discussion, the three alternatives. I wasn't intending to spend the rest of the day developing objectives to meet the goals. I think we will really be in the weeds, as Sally said. we do
okay,
that.
Okay, so just so we're going to leave the objectives then up to the groundfish committee is what we're saying, right? Basically.
We're not going to do it here today. So if the groundfish committee wants to develop objectives around some of the work that it does.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody understands exactly what a vote on this means and that we're leaving this discussion and moving on to something else so that if they don't, for some reason, support this, it's basically speak now or hold your peace.
Correct. Anything else? Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for some housekeeping, just for my own records, can we substitute Mr. Simpson's goals and actually list them so when we get the meeting summary, they'll be listed in there? Right now it just says the motion, Mr. Simpson's goals. Can you just list the goals for me, please? Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Tom needs.
It might be helpful for when I take these back, assuming the motion carries, when I take these back to the PDT, if the council perhaps speculates a little bit on how different alternatives may or may not meet these particular goals. Just an example, number two is simplify management. It's a little unclear to me how the decision on how you allocate may or may not simplify management. I mean, and you know, maybe the council members who are promoting that as a goal for this allocation thing can offer some ideas on how the decision to allocate simplifies management. Now, it could be, say, okay, we come up with an alternative that is easier to calculate than another alternative, and maybe that's your argument that is simplifying management. But give the industry greater control over their own fate. Once again, it's not clear to me how you can have a couple of alternatives that piece out the, you know, determine potential sector contributions. How you can look at them and say, okay, any one gives the industry more control than any other. I mean, if these goals are specific to the allocation issue, which I think is what we've said, it would be helpful if, you know, the council maybe comes up with some examples that say, you know, well, this is how things might be different under, you know, different alternatives for the sector contribution might be evaluated differently under these particular goals. Yeah, I'm just looking for some examples, perhaps maybe from Mr. Simpson, since these are his goals, or somebody else that you know, might make it easier to try and explain when we take these back to the PDT, you know, how we should interpret some of these things.
Mr. Simpson, to your goals.
Yeah, well, it was all going my way until Mike spoke up. But I guess I have to go to work tomorrow. Yeah, it is meant to be general. I was thinking, too, in terms of administration. Pat's letter pointed out some issues that if things were done a certain way, you'd have whatever it is, you know, 15 or so sectors allocated, 19 different stocks. The monitoring and keeping up with all of that would be extremely, extremely burdensome. And I guess I saw some of these on the list of 13 starting to get into micromanaging and making decisions that maybe a sector could make themselves and work out themselves. And so I guess my thought in putting that on the list is as much as possible, you know, move decisions on how to deal with things to the sectors and take on some of the responsibility for you know, making the system work as opposed to the government being in there and us, you know, making things extraordinarily difficult, which is what we have a habit of doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, one example might be if, in terms of an alternative, if we picked status quo and we were faced with the five-year rolling average, that would be, from a management standpoint, more difficult to administer. You'd have to be recalculating on an ongoing basis what the allocations would be versus, and I'm just saying, versus using straight history where it could be calculated once and you could then use that percentage on an ongoing basis. I mean, that's to me, that's the kind of thing that says, you know, simplify management. I don't have them all here in front of me, but that would be the kind of thing that certainly I'd see for that.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to put it in the way I have a perspective of it. I take these goals now, or the purpose of these goals is to give us guidance when we try to choose which of the three alternative, or however many we end up with, alternatives for allocation. And just go down through those and see if they give you any help. Does any of those give you any guidance on what to do about that decision? They don't. They give you a guidance of why we want to have sectors. They give you an overall background of what's the value of it and why you want to do the whole part for sectors. But they don't give you help as to getting towards the measures that you're going to do, the actual choice of which one of those alternatives you want. So while I don't object to them, and I think that they're just not very useful in giving us any direction, giving the committee any direction or anybody else any direction of which of those alternatives you choose. I think the others, we may disagree on which ones we prefer, but they do give direction. They do give some specific idea of what you should be choosing that alternative to do. it's obviously this has gone forward this far, but it's just not speaking to the point. It's not getting to where we want to go. So I think by going through that other list, choosing the ones we want, it may be getting into the weeds, but we are getting into the boggy marsh here if we don't do something that actually works towards those alternatives that we're trying to choose. Thank you.
Pat?
I'm almost at the same place that Jim is. I didn't object to these as long as I thought they were just sort of general goals that did no harm, basically. But I don't think that they get at where we started on this, which is the committee came forward with two alternatives. Why those two alternatives? I mean, that's the question I think that the council is asking the committee. Why those two alternatives? What are you trying to achieve with those two alternatives, and do they achieve it? And we're sort of trying to get at it the other way around, which is what is the council trying to achieve, and therefore do these two alternatives fit with that? But ultimately, we are missing the question. We've got two alternatives in front of us. They do very different things in terms of distribution of the allocation. And that's, you know, sort of the unspoken thing here. And do they do what you expect them to do, and what is it you're trying to do with it? What is it you're trying to achieve with it? So I thought these were, I actually got confused and thought these were goals for the overall sector program versus goals for the allocation. And I think they're appropriate from that perspective still, but they don't get us to where we need to be.
I had Jim Odlin, then Frank Blount, and then Dana Rice.
Well, you know, I can see where Pat and Jim are coming from. And if you look at the two amendments, you can. When we were doing the work at the committee, the two alternatives, part of the reason that they're so different is that we wanted to have a range of options and not just something that's very narrow, and that's part of what we have to do. So that's one reason. We had a range. They're totally different. They're kind of on a spectrum that are a ways apart. I think that was one of the designs. And the other designs, you could plug in all these goals and objectives that you have here. So, I don't know, maybe it's... No, that's it. I guess we have that on the table. So, lost my train of thought, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to vote in favor of this, but I think there's... I'm a little concerned on the discrepancy between a couple. And number three says, give the industry greater control over their own fate. And then at number five, we're saying prevent excessive consolidation that would eliminate the day boat fishery. And I can understand why we'd want to protect the day boat fishery and that aspect of the fleet, but I'm not sure why we're not trying to preserve other aspects of the fleet. And if you're giving the industry greater control over their own fate, if the industry decides that that's the way they want to go, that's up to the industry. So I think the number three and number five, they're against one another. I think if you have number three, you don't need number five. Or number five has to be that you want to preserve, you may want, the mid-sized draggers might disappear in there, so you might want to say we want to keep the mid-sized boats. I just think that we're back to a very specific on number five.
So. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you can see that, I think we can all... We're all aware of the conversation we've had a half a day here, basically what we want the committee to do, and the committee members are sitting around this table, so they have I think they understand it pretty well. What we've been doing here, what we're getting into now is split in halves. You can't make this perfect. All of the comments are on record, and anybody that's sitting at this table should have a basic idea of what the full council wants the committee to do. I'm, quite frankly, am ready to move on to the selecting the alternatives and quote somebody at this table once before, I don't think we should let perfection stand in the way of good. I think we should go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else in the council? Tom, you had your hand up before. Did you?
No, I think I got that answer.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve opposed. Two opposed. One abstention. Motion as substituted carries 12-2, one abstention. Okay, Rip. We'll go back to the allocation alternative that the committee forwarded to the council.
I need to make that motion.
You're going to need to make the motion again.
Thank you. On behalf of the Groundfish Committee, I would like to make the motion that I don't have them actually in front of me. We accept the council accept the three alternatives for allocation, for sector allocation, the no action alternative, the alternative one, which is history associated with each permit joining sector will be calculated based on landings during the period of 96 through 2006, and alternative two, which is the history and the capacity calculation.
Committee motion, no second required. Discussion, Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to place back on the table my withdrawn motion and word it properly this time.
you want to make a motion to...
Motion to add the third alternative, yes, that's correct.
I have a second. Seconded by John Nelson. Okay, Dave, discussion.
Okay, well, the discussion, I don't want to belabor it. It's basically what I said before. I think that this completes what needs to be completed. I'm very nervous about having alternatives up here that do not include the preferred alternative by the organization that has 13, I believe it is, of the sector applications in. I think we need to have that for comparison. Of the nine or so alternatives that were considered by the committee, this is the one that was most contentious. The vote to include the alternative two instead of this was very close. And given the fact that it's been a subject of wide discussion, I think it needs to be put back on the list of alternatives. Thank you.
So you're speaking for it because you made it. Anyone wishing to speak against the motion to amend from the council? Jim Salisbury?
Well, I speak against it only because I don't know what it is. We don't have even a cursory view of what the implications of that are, as we do have a cursory review of the other three. So I don't know whether it's good or bad, or whether it's redundant, or whether how it goes. If we're going to leave that up to the committee to decide and work on, first they're going to have to get the PDT to go give a review of that, then go review all of them. So it seems to me that this is putting this off quite far down the road, and so I speak against it. I think it appears to be very similar to the second alternative. We're getting these numbers starting to get confusing, but the second alternative in the motion seems to be very similar to it. I suspect it has some significant difference, otherwise they wouldn't propose it, but I have no idea how that's going to go. So at this late date, I don't think I can support going back to doing what the committee has already decided against it in some form, so I don't want to go back to it. Thank you.
Someone wishing to speak for? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I won't repeat everything I said this morning. When I began my discussions about allocation alternatives, I cited the coalition's letter. I went through a long list of reasons why they were concerned, and frankly, I'm concerned. At this point in time, I don't know what alternative to vote for. Three, two, I don't know. I want an analysis, and enough has been said about alternative three to make me want to see that analysis before I make a very fateful decision that will... This council makes a fateful decision that will have far-reaching impacts, long-term impacts on the groundfish fishery in terms of how it's constituted. It's an allocation amendment. This is it. Case closed. We do it through this amendment. We think we may change down the road to something else. Maybe, but I suspect that'll be a long time down the road. So I support this. And just a point of order, Mr. Chairman, is alternative two worded correctly? Is that the committee's motion that was made? Doesn't look right.
So I'll turn to the committee chair and staff to confirm. Tom?
Well, this language is a language taken from the agenda that was published for the meeting. And there's been some criticisms of the way the agenda is published because it doesn't really specify in alternative two how that calculation is done. And so, you know, this motion, I think, is subject to the same criticism. It really doesn't tell you how the calculation is being done under alternative two or which stocks it applies to. We do have some language that we could plug in there which does do exactly that, I think, if you want us to. But that's, you know, it's not the motion that was made earlier.
In a second, dude. My question is, the motion that's the main motion that is came from the committee, is that the committee's motion?
It is not the language of the committee motion.
Okay.
No.
So the language on the board is what's in the agenda. And the question that you have about, or the concern that it doesn't define how the calculation is performed, was that dealt with in the motion out of the committee?
Yes.
Okay. So that's actually the motion that RIP should be making, not the motion that's...
Well, I mean, if you want, we can show you what that motion looks like, and then, you know, you can decide if that's the motion that should be up there or not.
Okay, well, we have a motion to amend, so we'll stay on that, but when we come back to the main motion, either as amended or not, we're going to need to deal with that issue.
Right.
Dave Pierce.
Yeah, I thought that RIP made a motion on behalf of the committee, and the committee's motion is on page 11 of the minutes of the meeting. So what's going on? It's pretty simple, I should think. It's just changed the language so it reflects the motion that was made by the committee. That's what the committee offered up. That's why I raised the point. This is not what the committee recommended. It's something entirely different. So the committee's position has been unintentionally, accidentally misrepresented.
You said page 11. What document, Dave?
That would be document number 4, the Groundfish Oversight Committee meeting summary, December 12 and 13. The second day's discussion was about allocation, and that's page 11. Middle of the page, it carried on show of hands 5-2-1.
Okay, while we straighten that out, someone wishing to speak for? Dave Gadel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment here, this motion actually gets at a number of the issues that I've been kind of hammering away at from day one in this process. The issue of assigning some portion of all stocks to all people, that goes a long ways towards smoothing out the inequities here. Remember the discussion we had about George's Bank Haddock. I'll cite that as Exhibit A. It also relieves us of having to determine where a fish was caught. I mean, I can see under the other option here, endless haggling over, am I a Gulf of Maine yellowtail? Am I a George's Bank yellowtail? Am I a Southern New England yellowtail? Because some of the areas you report in the VTR cross all three stocks. So you won't be able to prove or disprove, so people are naturally going to want all three. It also gets us away from a strictly landings-based system. A number of these permits have changed hands a number of times in the last 10 years. And a person today may be in control of a permit that has history primarily in, say, the Mid-Atlantic, and he may be fishing in Eastport, Maine. So this at least gets us somewhere away from that problem. 50% of the way away from it. It also gets us away from the issue of this so-called de minimis issue. What happens if codfish all of a sudden show up off of Barnegat Light and we don't have any allocation of codfish because we never caught one in the last 10 years? So I see a lot of reasons to go forward with this. I see a lot of reasons where it can smooth things out and make this a little more palatable, recognizing the earlier discussions we had today where I'm not 100% satisfied with this. I don't even know if I'm 80%. But, I think people are going to have to start looking at these and saying, you know, which one is the most palatable of the list. So, anyway, I support this motion and hope we can get some analysis of it.
Against? Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if I could get the maker of the motion to state the rationale on the 50-50 formula. The 10 times length times plus horsepower times allocated A days, what the rationale is that the larger vessels would get more allocation. When Amendment 5 issued days at sea to everybody, whether you're a 100-foot boat or 10-foot boat, you get the same amount of days. And why they think now that the formula, that they should get 10 times the length plus the horsepower, what the rationale is behind that. anything in this 50-50 split, that 50% has got to come from somewhere. That's actually a taking of fish from somebody that actually landed those fish. And why it should be reallocated because they have a larger boat. I'd like to hear the rationale, please. Thank you.
I don't have an answer. That's an open question.
It was actually to the maker of the motion, please.
Well, that's the formula. It's in both of the 50-50. The one that the committee debated and the one that's now part of the amendment. That formula is consistent, right? Okay. I don't know if the maker wants to offer any insight into it or not.
At this point, it's been discussed ad infinitum, and it's going to be discussed further. It's going to be analyzed by the PDT. It's going to be discussed here before this council. And there are people far more articulate on it than I am that will be doing that before we make a decision. I'd rather not spend a lot of time on it now.
Someone wishing to speak for the motion to amend? Jim Odlin, and then I'm going to go to Tom Neese.
Yeah, I'm not. I have a question, and I'm not asking the question for or against. At this point, I don't know what to do. And I'd like to ask either Rip or Tom Neese, what does this do to timing? And by that, I mean this goes back to the committee? Or does it go to the PDT to be analyzed, and then it's a final add-on to the block of options that we will be taking out, or probably having final action on in a couple of meetings, but that will end up going out to the public? I'm just a little unclear, so I'd like to know what the timing mechanism of this particular section is. Where does it go from here?
You're referring to our precious few resources that we have? Okay. Tom?
Well, assuming all these motions carry forward and they get voted, I mean, my understanding was that this was one issue that the council hoped to resolve today was what the alternatives were for allocation of the potential sector contributions. So it would be my understanding, if these pass, that these are the three or four, whichever the result is, alternatives that go into the document, and that they are not going to really go back to the committee for further review, but they're going to go into the document. I'm assuming, maybe wrongly, that we would not revisit this debate at the February council meeting. Maybe we will when we approve the whole package of alternatives for the amendment. But, you know, my assumption would be that we'd only do this once. With respect to analysis, we've done some of the types of analyses that I showed you for the first three alternatives. The Science Center managed to get those done yesterday. I haven't shown them in part because we didn't get them distributed. We've done those, and we've done some other types of analyses that haven't been done. So we've already done some of that work, and we'll, of course, expand on it for all the alternatives in the draft DDSEIS, assuming they go forward.
Tom?
If I might. Well, Rip is here. There's actually sort of a technical error in the last phrase here, that this alternative apply across all stocks in all areas. We haven't got to it yet, for example, but one of the committee recommendations is that we not give a hard tack for all stocks to sectors because of some problems with a few stocks that are small. I'm trying to think of a better way to reword that last phrase. I mean, the point we're trying to make is, well, maybe Dave Preble's got a suggestion. He's raising his hand.
Dave?
Yeah, we could probably just add the words apply across all stocks with hard tax. Would that?
I think the point we're trying to make is that if we look back at the previous alternative two. Can you scroll up, Karen? Alternative 2 says that, no, it doesn't say it there. Sorry. The version that the committee passed says that the portion allocated on capacity applies to the stock areas fished and stocks landed by the permit. What we want to say here is the portion allocated based on capacity applies to all stocks allocated to sectors. So I think if we say on the bottom, allocated days at sea, back up to the end there, say, comma or semicolon, the portion allocated based on capacity applies to all stocks allocated to sectors. And to make that just so it's clear for the record, we mean, you know, regardless of where the boat fished or what the boat landed, it gets a piece of every stock under this alternative based on capacity.
Everybody clear on that? Dave?
Yeah, just a question again about the formula. Can I presume if that stays in there that in the analysis of alternatives that an analysis would be done in terms of the appropriateness of that particular formula in capturing the fishing power of the vessel? I mean, that's really what we want to get at is some, I thought some regression or something would have been done on this to relate vessel length and horsepower to the fishing power of the vessel, and that's what you want in there. And I'm concerned that what's up here is simple but doesn't do, you know, just isn't the right formula in essence.
Well, I mean, I can't guarantee it is the right formula. You know, I know that the people working on the buyout did some analyses and they agreed on this formula, and there's some analysis that backs that up, which I'm not completely familiar with, you know, but members of our staff helped develop it. Chad Demarest helped work on that project a year ago. It's possible, you know, from some of the things that have been done over the last week, it's possible that some of these factors are really kind of redundant. Length and horsepower tend to be fairly well correlated with each other in this fishery. They're not a perfect match. And so, you know, I'm not sure that you add more information by including both of them than you do by using one of them. But, I mean, yeah, we can look at that, and I'm sure we can conclude whether or not this really represents capacity.
Anyone else on the council before I go to the audience? Anyone in the audience? So, Libby?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, council members. We had a meeting a couple days ago among the Port Clyde, Glenn Libby, Port Clyde, Maine, representing the Port Clyde sector. We had a meeting a couple days ago trying to decide if we wanted this in there or not. And I can say after today, listening to Tom and thinking it over, I think we do want this added in, all stocks to all areas. And the reason is, it's just kind of an insurance policy. I think Tom said the allocation wouldn't be much if you didn't land, so that kind of takes away the concern of giving up stocks that you might actually catch, but it also protects you from catching something you didn't expect to catch and sink in the sector. So I would have to support that for that reason. Thank you.
Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I'm still, as you know, I wrote a letter to the council on the subject of the sector allocation and asked for some explanation of what the rationale was for using factors other than landings history in an allocation decision. And at this point, it's difficult to favor one of these alternatives over the other because they're not understanding what the objective really is. Maybe I heard it today when, just recently, when Mr. Gaethel said that he wanted to assign some portion of all stocks to all people. And if that's the objective, I think what you need to look at is one example of how that might play out. Take something like Southern New England Yellowtail that has a very, very low TAC. First thing you have to do is take off the top what's going to be caught in the scallop fishery, what's going to be caught in other fisheries, and then you have to figure out what would be left for the groundfish fishery. And there are some people who fish in the Southern New England area who obviously would, if it was based on landings history, would get a portion of that. But under a formula where a vessel that fishes out of Port Clyde gets a portion of that, then the vessel that fishes in Southern New England gets a much smaller portion of that. And I think Tom pointed out in the analysis that they did on the variation of this alternative two that the portions get smaller and smaller. So I think that this particular option makes it sort of exacerbates that issue. So how does that helpful? How does that helpful to the person who fishes only in that example in Southern New England and needs that little bit of yellowtail to be able to continue to operate in that area? He has to then scramble around to trade with someone else who, you know, could hold his entire fishery hostage to, you know, a few pounds of yellowtail. So, I mean, I think, again, it's really difficult to determine what is the best way to go. But I just wanted to make sure that people really understood. I don't think if you're not on the committee, you might not understand the nuances between these two alternatives that have some kind of capacity formula. But the question still remains, why wouldn't you do it just based on landings history over a 10-year period, which captures the performance fairly well of the vessels that you're allocating to? And I don't know if history is the best way to go. I don't know if this is the best way to go because I don't know what the objectives are. I still don't know what the objectives are of doing something other than landings history, which is generally when you allocate a percentage of the TAC in fisheries around the world, what you do. You look what a vessel has performed, and that's what they get, that percentage of the TAC. Thank you.
Anyone else? Carl?
Tal Bouchard, Fishing Vessel Stormy Weather. I would support this motion because of the fact that many permits have changed hands in the recent years. And a person having recently purchased a permit that is intended now to fish in the Gulf of Maine under the Days at Sea system, if it came from Southern New England, Connecticut, or Rhode Island or something like that, would in fact be worthless because it wouldn't get that 50% credit. So under this scenario, it would get some credit for its permit in itself. So I would support the motion. But with all of that said, there's a couple of points I would like to make now if the chairman would allow.
Are they to the motion?
They are basically to all of the motions.
On sector allocation or?
I think we're talking about allocation, and there's not a person in this room that doesn't believe that what allocation we do for sector is not eventually going to carry forward into an ITQ system. So the points that I have written down apply to sector allocation. They also apply to the ITQ, which we are basically developing right now.
We're not talking about ITQs right now.
Well, we are in a backdoor way getting into ITQs by allocating to the sectors in a given manner. And the council is not going to revisit this thing and fight the battle twice. So I don't want to disagree with you, but I do.
that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So like it or not, Days of Sea is what we've been living with. We have been operating under a day at sea system created by the council and approved by the National Marine Fisheries Service for 18 years now. Days at sea is a currency of opportunity we have all invested in. Many fishermen have invested heavily and even mortgaged their homes for the days at sea to keep their businesses alive. While it might be legal to change from days at sea to a history-based allocation system, it certainly would not be morally or ethically correct. This would be like telling a person that has been putting money in the bank for the last 20 years that his money is no longer valid. Just remember that those who have worked hard and have large histories have already gotten their rewards. They have sold and were paid for the fish that they caught. If our fisheries are in trouble from overfishing, it is from those with the largest histories. It is not right to further reward them with a bigger piece of the pie. I personally own a couple of permits with excellent history. There is no reason those permits or anyone else's should own a larger share of quota for generations to come. Generations of fish, generations of people, simply because someone caught a lot of fish in a certain 5 or 10 year period out of a 300-year fishery. We need an allocation system that has a direct relationship to days at sea. And thank you for your time.
Carl, anyone else? Mike?
Yes, hi. Mike Love, thank you for recognizing me and so forth. I just wanted to, Mr. Bouchard really took a lot of my thunder right there. I would second, third, whatever, more or less everything that he said. I'm one of these people that basically had permits years ago that, you know, had a lot of Gulf of Maine history and so on and so forth. Because days at sea became currency of the realm and that sort of thing, had to make some large financial and adjustments and so forth to move to other permits, which now all their traditional history, those permits during these various qualification periods would all be Georges Bank articles and so forth, of fish stocks, even though we principally fish in the Gulf of Maine. So I would be one of these people that would have no, for instance, Gulf of Maine cod, but have all kinds of Georges Bank cod. I would, so to that end, I would have to, you know, support the motion. Every permit would get, you know, so much fish, you know, in total, I guess. But the bigger issue is also, Mr. Bouchard said, the rank and file fishermen are not so interested in jumping over the sector cliff as are maybe some folks in this room. I just talked to three people actually at sea today, guys who had called me up, one of my own boat and other friends in other boats that were talking about this issue was. And they said, nothing's going to happen. Nothing much is going to happen. What the rank and file don't realize is this is a decision. Today is a huge thing. If we wind up with the sector scenario, as it's envisioned, there was one letter, I believe it was from the director, that showed all the various combinations and so forth that could happen. This is going to be an unmanageable mess. We're going to have enforcement. We're not sure what rules this group's under or that one's under and so forth. And unless we eventually want to see, you know, 100% observer coverage, that includes, you know, on 40 footers, you know, with four crew and four bunks and observer all the time, it's going to be quite interesting, and we're going to have very lively council meetings to follow if all this goes at the pace that it's going. And so I'd be just, please put me down for please stay with the days at sea system and work around as best we can. We see this as to some extent a circular reference. We've heard this is a lifeboat sector to get us to the near term, you know, for the time being and so forth. But yet, by the same token, with the complexity of changing everything, it's not going to be ready until perhaps 2010. That doesn't sound like the near term. Best thing would be to try and stay with what we know and go with that. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? A lot of hands now, Phil. Chris Brown, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be brief, but that doesn't work out all the time. Everybody, anyhow. I want to start off with not against sectors. At the same token, I wasn't against all of the other alternative management ideas that came out. I think they all have merits, considerable merit. What I do find problematic is the way the council is going with this here now of doing the allocations for the sectors under the sector guise. The way I follow this here now is we are going to reallocate in this amendment and under the guise of sectors. To me, that's problematic. I mean, the argument is the allocation. It always has been the allocation, and it's going to stay the allocation. And in my estimation, that's the argument you need to have. Take sectors out of it. Because if you settle the allocation argument, you can do sectors very easy. You could do points very easy. You could do ITQs very easy. You can do days at sea very easy. You can do any one of the alternatives that are around simply and efficiently. Yet the way we're doing this is you're doing this allocation or reallocation, and you're doing it under the guise of sectors. What really troubles me there is a few years back we reallocated under Amendment 13. You know, call it what you want. There was a reallocation in Amendment 13. That was, what, 4 years ago? Not even 4 years ago? So 4 years from now, when the flaws from sectors come out, or you find the faults and this is not working and that's not working, are we going to be back at the table going for another reallocation battle? And I kind of think you leave yourself wide open for that by doing it this way. So I really feel that the council should be having a discussion of the allocation. I think that definitely needs to happen, but it shouldn't be happening under the guise of sectors. It should be happening out in front the way it should be done.
Chris Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Council. Chris Brown, the President of Rhode Island Commercial Fishermen Association. We are very much in favor of Alternative 3. We have a pretty good example of what happens when you cling desperately to a very rigid allocation scheme. The stock is fluke. A couple of years ago, I talked to some friends of mine in the Mid-Atlantic region about possibly working to allocate more fluke to the north to accommodate their movement. They were, to say the least, not receptive. They clung very desperately to what they believed was a core stock and something upon which they were very dependent. They thought it was in their best interest. Now, as the stock has shifted over the years, we have generated an enormous bycatch problem. That bycatch problem has thwarted our ability to grow the stock back on paper and in reality. So clinging desperately to a steadfast allocation of fish that you think is in your best interest initially can turn around and bite you harder than it bites everybody else. They're more dependent on fluke than I am, and as a result of their unwillingness to recognize the potential for stock shift, they've been more damaged. So I think the 50-50 allocation goes a long way to covering stock shift. Well, guys, you know, people can't lose sight of the fact that the greatest provider that you have is the recovery of a stock, not how much you can skin your neighbor or your brother out of in the initial allocation formula. When these stocks recover, and I believe they will, we are going to have a tremendous amount of fish, and these arguments that we're having today will seem less important. We have to empower a program that takes best care of the fish. We have not done that to date. Days at sea is what we are running from as fast as we can because of a discard problem. We should simply put in a plan which would in all likelihood discourage the greatest amount of discards. Right now, it looks like number three would do that. With integration of the sectors, which we are all planning to do, as stock shift, transfer of quota from one person to another through the integration that we envision would take care of things. The fish will end up going on the right boats in the right ports, but we have to get about the business of taking care of the fish first. Thank you.
Okay, take a few more comments. Jim Lovgren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Lovgren, Fisherman's Dock Co-op, New Jersey. Just wanted to bring to the attention, and one, I support the addition of this alternative here. I think we need, well, we've went through seven of them down and weeded this out, but we do need this one here. In New Jersey, we have a ground fish fishery that consists of land-ins of 250 to 400,000 pounds of blackback flounder a year, okay? Back in the late 90s, and I do support 96 to 2006 as a time frame, and this is why. Back in the late 90s, the last yellowtail flounder fishery we had was in 1997, 1998. It consisted of about 200,000 pounds of fish in a year, all from January through March. That's the landings as those fish come down in the winter. That was it. That's all we got. Going with these short time frames that NIMS is, well, I won't say NIMS, it's the councils, that the councils put on, we lose access to these fish, okay? Clearly, stocks are shifting to the east. Okay, Chris is talking about summer flounder moving to the east. There's no question the stocks of summer flounder are moving to the east. But are you going to take those fish away from the North Carolina guys, and what are they going to get back? Grouper? You know, everything's moving to the north. Whiting are supposedly fully rebuilt, yet New Jersey, that used to land 30% of the whiting on the East Coast throughout the 70s and 80s, we're lucky we land 3% of whiting anymore. Okay? That's not fully rebuilt to me. They should be back here. David, our Barnegat Light cod fishery that we would have in January in the 70s, we haven't seen that since the 70s. I'd like to get that back. I'd like to request right now of the council, since I caught three codfish in the last month, I would like to be able to take those codfish home without being arrested, because I ate them. Okay, that might have been illegal. I wasn't on a day at sea. But I'm not going to throw that away. One, we fight over codfish in New Jersey when you land one. It's so rare. That's like the only three codfish I've caught in 2 years. So I would request that a provision be made in the next amendment or in this amendment here that would allow a vessel, let's say, in the mid-Atlantic region, to bring home a codfish, because he's just going to float on the surface, get picked apart by seagulls. But regardless of that, thing is, we need to be, you know, considering now, we were talking before, you had these 13 bullet points up there, and one of them was about dependence on the fishery. The mid-Atlantic fisheries operate differently than New England fisheries. We're not dependent on groundfish, okay? We're not dependent on any one species. The mixed trawl fisheries in the southern New England, that includes a lot of Rhode Island fishermen, they'll tell you that. We're tired of being shoehorned into one fishery when historically we have participated in half a dozen fisheries. We've just got kicked out of general category fisheries, basically, and that's many boats that were original scallop permit holders going back to when they first issued them. Okay, because they didn't fit into this time frame you guys fit in, because it wasn't economical for them to fish with a net, and there wasn't enough to work on 400 pounds a day at $3 a pound. So they didn't do it, and they don't qualify. Or they got enough there that they might be able to fish a week for it. What's going to happen in the next year here, and Jimmy touched on it, the price of fuel combined with the regulations going through with general categories is going to put 25 to 35% of the fleet currently in business out of business. You won't have to worry about capacity reduction. Economics is going to do it itself. I would request, now I'm a groundfish advisor. I've been for years, including being on a groundfish committee. There's been two groundfish advisory committee meetings in the last 2 years. The last one was 7 or 8 months ago. At that meeting, I found out that about halfway through, it occurred to me that, gee, this is all about sectors, and apparently if you don't join a sector, you're going to be screwed. You're going to be on a Titanic, and you'll be the one without the lifeboat. Okay? After that meeting, it was within 2 weeks, you had to get a sector proposal in. All right? And that's when the Northeast Seafood Coalition threw in about a dozen placeholders and so forth. Anybody that didn't get into these sectors isn't in the sector. And they are the ones that are going to drown. Now, ideally, Point Pleasant and Belford co-ops, with these little bit of fish that they have, that'd be perfect for a sector. And I'd love to see the sector door opened again, because I like sectors. I think they're a useful tool. But there's been no federal money coming to New Jersey. There's been no private money, millions of dollars going all to New England people. Nothing's come down in New Jersey. So where does that leave us? So I'm just bringing this up. Don't forget us. We're still here. And although we don't depend on groundfish, when you take away that 10 to 20% of our income, we're out of business at this point because everybody's hanging on right now. I can tell you the Belford Co-op is one of the longest continuously operating co-ops in the country, and they are on the verge of going out of business. Probably will be by the summer. And that's a sad state of affairs. Thanks.
All right, two more. Vito, you got the last word. Please keep your comments to the motion.
I'm Harold Loftus from Point Judith, Rhode Island. What I see here is going to put me right out of business. In the latter part of 2006, I bought a small boat from Gloucester for 42 days at sea. I paid a lot of money for that very poor boat for those 42 days at sea. I spent a lot of money on that boat. I didn't get that boat fishing until 2007. What I see here, 96 to 2006, I'm going to be out of business. There'll be nothing for me. What little history that boat has when it comes from Gloucester, either the man was a poor fisherman or he was lazy. So there's very little history there. I bought that boat based on those days at sea. What this tells me is they're worth nothing. So I can't support any of this. I'd rather work with the days at sea and take my chances. Thank you.
Vito?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We support this motion. Basically just wanted to just help some of the council members who were asking for some goals and objectives. The coalition submitted the first letter on July 24th of this year, July 24th, and then again a letter on September 4th. Both of those letters stated goals, objectives, and rationale behind this concept. They were submitted on the record. One was actually, I think, signed by 13 or 14 of the sectors that had all the goals and rationale that was supplied to the Groundfish Committee on September 24th. So we could go on and on about the what we believe would be the benefits to this, but many of the previous speakers have done that. I'd like to echo what Maggie said. I mean, we agree with her. We're in a situation where we're not advocating for one alternative or another. We want to see the analysis that we like the idea that the straight catch history is up there, and we like the idea that this alternative has the potential to go up there because the 13 sectors that we represent would like to see this go up for analysis. But we will, hold back where we really support as far as in the final analysis when we see that analysis. The crude analysis that we've gotten so far is very helpful, but it's very coarse, and we would need much finer resolution analysis so that we can advise members as to how that's actually going to impact their business one-on-one, not necessarily their state or their vessel size. So for that reason, we support that completely. And I'd just like to relieve the council to, this at least represents 13 of the sectors that we support this as one alternative to go forward. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Further discussion on the motion to amend? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten. Opposed? Two opposed. Abstentions? Two abstentions. The motion to amend carries 10-2 with two abstentions. Back on the main motion as amended. Any further discussion? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just primarily questions. In reading the document, the status quo option has been described as the years 2002 to 2006, and it's also described as the previous, is based on a concept of the previous 5 years, 6 years, 5 years, I think it is. And I want to be sure that what's meant by that is that allocation period would be a moving period. It would continually be the previous 5 years. As the reason it says 2002 to 2006 is basically those are the closest to the previous 5 years that we have right now that we can deal with. There was some confusion to me when in reading that document about which way it really is. Is it going to be forever the period 2002 to 2006, or is it going to be the previous 5 years of rolling forward? And I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it for sure which way it is.
It's a sliding 5 years, but there are technical limitations to which 5 years it is. In other words, if you're submitting, let's say that's the alternative that becomes the basis for allocation for sectors, and you're looking to fish 2009, start May 1, 2009, it's not going to include the fishing year that started in 2007. It has to be the fishing year that ended April of 2007, which is the 2006 fishing year, because there's a lag in getting that information processed. So unless I'm wrong, Tom, that 5 years continues to move.
Yes, that's the no-action alternative. And as worded on the agenda, it just says if you're starting to fish in a sector in 2009, the 5 years are 2002 through 2006, because those are the years that NIMS has the data available to do the calculation.
Okay, anything further on the motion as amended? John Nelson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that, a little bit more. Based on the policy that was adopted, and if the no action is the sector approach that we use, I'm wondering whether or not that five-year sliding actually disappears and you actually have to have a fixed time frame, because everyone will be under a fixed time frame based on the policy that was adopted.
Well, you're correct. It does conflict with the policy, but the no-action alternative is in existence in the current management plan that we have. This next management plan needs to adopt that policy, and at that point, the status quo or the no-action will be irrelevant.
Conflict.
Anything else? Plan to call the question, and then I'm going to take a quick break. Tom Neese.
Unless I'm mistaken, I don't think we cleared up the concern that Dr. Pierce raised about the language for Alternative 2, did we? I thought we said we'd come back to that after we voted on the amended motion. I don't know how you want to handle that.
We've
got a motion on the floor that doesn't really explain what Alternative 2 really is. Karen has put up the original committee motion language there. And the piece that's missing from Alternative 2 basically is the stuff that describes the formula and points out that it applies to the stock, actually the stock areas fish, stocks landed by the permit. It really applies to the stocks landed by the permit, not the stock areas fish.
We have a conflict between what the committee We have a conflict between what the committee passed and what was typed on the board. Do I need to go back and amend the language through a parliamentary procedure? Is there any objection to me changing the language, that we change the language in alternative two to reflect what the committee voted on so it's identical? Any objection? Tom Neese?
I don't have an objection. I just want to make it clear that people know what the committee meant by this language. It basically meant that if you fished in the Gulf of Maine and you only caught Gulf of Maine cod, the capacity portion of your formula only applied to Gulf of Maine cod. It didn't apply to any other stocks in the Gulf of Maine area or any other area. That's what the committee meant on this language. I'm a little troubled that we didn't catch it before at the committee meeting. You know, this phrase, stock areas fished, is potentially open to misinterpretation down the road. The formula real that the committee adopted, they made it very clear during, you know, the discussion that said this capacity piece just applies to things you caught.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe, and again, I think this could be done under the same procedure. That same formula should be spelled out in Alternative 3 as well. You know, essentially, it's that same language, and it should be there.
I believe it is there, right?
No.
Board keeps moving.
What?
I think we have it cleared up. Jim?
The alternative three is meant to be the opposite of that. It's meant to be regardless of where the boat fished or landed. Therefore, you get an allocation whether or not you caught fish or landed it. So it's not it, that language doesn't apply to alternative three.
Well, all we added in alternative three is the formula. And then the sentence still says the portion allocated based on capacity applies to all stocks allocated to sectors. So you still get a piece of all sectors. All we added in there was the phrase 10 times the length plus horsepower times the allocated A days. Just to make it clear what the formula was.
Yeah. Well, then it's very unclear to me what this means, and that's part of my objection to putting this in. We don't even have even a cursory analysis of what the implications are. I read that to say, regardless of what it says right there, regardless of where the boat's fished or landed. So to me, it implies it's the opposite of what number two is. And if it isn't, it is the opposite.
Yeah, that's the design.
I thought your comment, Mr. Chairman, was the language that was added to two applies to three, but
the formula language, the 10L plus HP times allocated 8 days at sea are identical.
That's all, Mr. Chairman. All right, thank you.
Anyone else on the council before I call the question? Mike Leary.
I'd like to make a motion to amend on the capacity formula. I'd like to have that be to take the 10 times length plus horsepower and remove that and have the capacity be allocated A days only. So you take your number of allocated A days, and that would be your percentage of the overall days at sea, and that would be an equal playing field for everybody.
Is that for alternative 2 and 3, you said?
Yes, please.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Discussion? Discussion on the motion to amend. Jim Odlin.
Unfortunately, I don't know, have any clue what that would do and what it means, and I could not support a motion that I don't have a clue. I absolutely don't know what that would mean in an allocation process, so I have to say I have to oppose this motion.
Hi, John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I don't either know what it means, but I suspect that what Mike is trying to get is have another alternative that's quite different out there. I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if the or Michael, if the appropriate way would be to have the formula that's in there now. Let me see if I can get his attention afterwards, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if Michael, if the approach would be more appropriate, rather than making a substantive change like this, to have the analysis for alternatives 2 and 3 have a subset. A would be the formula that's in there now, and B would be that formula modified as you've suggested, so that way you get the analysis for both ways, so that the council can then assess which way makes more sense for them to go, because right now I don't think any of us know if that's a better way of doing it.
Mike Lear?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping today we'd pick one alternative instead of making 6. But if the PDT thinks they can analyze that both ways, I'm in agreement to that. Regardless of either or, we should at least take the 10 out, because no matter what, your length times 10 is the same for everybody.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, this goes back to, this will be the third time I'll address this whole calculation that seems to be have been pulled from the air, as far as I can tell. Either in the review of this, it needs to be analyzed to show what the relationship is between a vessel's size and its fishing capacity, or we need to do away with this. The 10L, the only thing I could figure sitting here is that you're trying to give equal weight to horsepower and length, because a 50-foot boat probably has 500 horsepower, and so it's, I figured that's what it was doing. Otherwise, I would think you would simplify as Tom suggested, get rid of horsepower, use length. There will be some kind of, in a regression, there would be some function of length that would equate to fishing power. So, in other words, I'm okay with this going through with the three alternatives, but part of that evaluation has to be what relationship to vessel size has to do with fishing power. That needs to be pulled out separately so that we can understand what's going on, that it's based on statistics and not just a number pulled from the air, and it's benefiting one size group arbitrarily versus another, and be able to ultimately either leave it in or take it out as we move forward on this.
Added Tom Neese. I don't recall seeing in any of the PDT notes that you've actually, as a PDT, looked at this formula and made any determinations on what it does. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe early on you did, but.
Well, there was no recommendation from the PDT to simplify the formula, make that clear. Not yet. What the PDT did,
do, which a very cursory look, we looked at, you know, the elements of the formula and which ones are correlated with history. And I got to be careful because I'm a little unclear on what they were correlated against. You know, and some of the elements are correlated very closely with history and others are not. I think it's a valid question. Is that, you know, if the intent is that this piece of the formula is supposed to distribute a portion of the allocation based on capacity, I think it's a legitimate question. Is this formula related to capacity? It may or may not be. You know, the folks involved with the industry buyouts say it is, but you know, that's something to be examined, I think. We do know that landings generally are fairly closely correlated with days at sea. That's, you know, the number of days at sea that you have is related to landings. That's how we allocate it.
Dave Gatham?
Yeah, I think John's probably described the right way to go here in terms of looking at them as two separate things. I understand we're both places are headed here. The formula comes from, it's a capacity formula. It's a way of somehow equating boats across a wide range of fisheries. So it's by nature general. In other words, it doesn't take into account the outliers. And as we said earlier today, you know, there's some 100-footers that don't catch much. And there's some 20-footers that catch a hell of a lot. And that's where that formula fails. Because, it's applied across the whole spectrum of the fleet, most of which is otter trawlers. So in general, for otter trawlers, the bigger the boat, the more it catches. Because it has more horsepower, has a bigger reduction gear, it's a bigger boat, it's got more momentum, go over hard bottom and go on and on and on. It's just got a better chance of catching stuff. We see it all the time. But it doesn't hold up for gillnetters. It doesn't hold up for hook boats, where horsepower and length are not a measure of catching capacity. In some general sense, they still are, because a 40-footer can fish in more bad weather than a 20-footer. But so we have to be careful what we're trying to do here. And I think what Mike's concerned about is the fact that there are, in the fixed gear sectors, or in this case, I don't mean wrong term, fixed gear fisheries, length is not a proxy for catchability, for capacity. But in the otter trawl fishery, it is. So probably the best way to proceed is to, first of all, have the formula analyzed and hopefully tease out exactly what I've just said, verify that it's true or it's not, and then also see what happens when you go strictly with A-days. Does it change things dramatically or doesn't? I suspect that for 90% of the boats, it's not going to change things much one way or the other. For 10%, it's going to change it dramatically. And that's why you're having this discussion today, because for that 10% of those people, they're going to want, you know, everybody wants every last pound they can get. And, you know, some people have a seat at the table to get it and some don't. And that's what this is about.
Okay, we have a motion to amend on the table. Terry?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a problem adding this to the motion. It probably will make for a better analysis, but as I said a little earlier today, it's just greatly adding to the work plan of both the committee and the technical staff. And I've been working hard with a number of others trying to get sectors in place for 2009. I'm starting to hope we can get them in place for 2012.
Anyone else? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I second the motion in order to hear the discussion, and I've heard it, and I think there is a valid concern about the formula and what the impact of that is. I don't think approving this amendment helps in that regard. Just analyzing a variety of things to give a demonstration of how it impacts it is not going to be very helpful. So I'd vote against the amendment, but I am concerned that options or alternatives 2 and 3, we have, with as little forethought as we have with this proposed amendment, you know, thrown in a formula. We don't know what it means, whether it's really applicable or not, and we've also thrown in a whole variation on a theme without even seeing any kind of demonstration of how it operates. What impact does it have, even a cursory one? So, to me, I think this proposed amendment just emphasizes the folly of going through something without having some good information to even begin to base the decision on. So I'll leave it at that and get on with voting down the amendment, but I'm very concerned about the other alternatives 2 and 3.
Go back to the maker, and then I'm going to call the question. Mike?
Yes, could I use John Nelson's suggestion and have him analyze both ways, the old formula and the new formula? The reason I'm concerned with the capacity formula, that was for a straight buyout, and they were trying to determine the capacity, past, present, and future, to give monetary rewards. If you're going to use 50% capacity points and 50% history, you're double dipping. If you think the larger boats have more capacity to catch the fish, and then you reward them with 50% history, which they caught more, plus a capacity formula, it's not correct. So if we could analyze it both ways, which would give us six alternatives to analyze, or five. I'm substituting now. I probably won't get a second, but...
You want to substitute your own amendment?
I'd like to change my amended motion to a substitute motion and hope somebody would second it, because I agree. I don't think this formula is right. It was kicking around and they grabbed it. I do know the currency we use now is days at sea, and it should be equal from a 40-footer to a 20-footer to a 100-footer. It's an opportunity day.
Okay, so I just want to be clear, number one, on what you want to do, and number two, how
to do it?
You do it appropriately. So you want to...
I'd like to have the PDT analyze...
You want to create an alternative 2 and an A and an alternative 3A, essentially.
Yes.
And 2A would strip out the length and horsepower, and 3A would strip out the length and horsepower portions of the formula. Is that pretty much what you want to do?
Yes.
So it's a motion to substitute?
Motion to substitute.
Right. I'm just going to view what you just said as a perfection to your own motion to amend, if the seconder agrees, and then I'm going to call for a vote on it. Jim, I'm sorry, you were the seconder. I said I'm just going to view that as a motion to perfect his original motion to amend, and then I'm going to call the question, if the seconder agrees. You don't agree with it? Okay. All right, Mike, why don't we... John?
Second. But I think that the language needs a couple of modifications, so if you want to take a quick break while we do that, Mr. Chairman, maybe that'll help. But I'll second the motion to perfect it.
Let's take a break.
So in that situation where they bought days and the days did have value, and now if you go to a history only without figuring out some kind of formula to get guys that have moved around or whatever into a level playing field or at least where they can survive, I mean, how is this going to work? I mean, there's boats, permits that have come from up north that are down south and permits from down south that are up north. Are we supposed to pick up and move? I mean, how is it going to work out that it's equitable for someone that's jumped all around and now my history is all over the coast? I didn't know if you had a plan for that. And there's one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about. Let's see. And what's the effect going to be on all the infrastructure when they get done doing all this stuff, like the net shops and the fuel companies and all that, when a lot of these guys get put out of business or the consolidation part of it comes into effect? How's that going to affect the infrastructure of the fishery? Is there any thought going into that as far as this plan is being developed? That was my comment. Thank you.
Carl?
Carl Bouchard, Fishing Vessel Stormy Weather. I do support this motion.
Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's validity in this, you know, attempt to look at something just a little broader. I don't know that any of you can honestly admit as individuals that you know what the formulaic motion that was that used the 10 times the length plus horsepower means. I mean, if you're crystal clear on that, then fair, then you have a position on this. But I don't know that you all do. So, I mean, all you're trying to do is trying to make a more informed decision somewhere down the road. If you have something else to look at, you have the ability to make a better informed decision. And I think with regards to the allocated A days, when those days were allocated, they were allocated in two ways. It was either you got a general allocation or you got an individual allocation. So, you know, with regards, that almost comes into the presence of, and a lot of boats that had probably a lot of the individual days you probably see into the larger vessels. Those are the ones that went after their individual allocations. I just think it's, you know, it's something that's going to, by considering this alternative, it's something that's going to inform you better when you have to make a decision better down the road. And as Dave Pierce has said all day, this is an allocation amendment. So give all the possibilities you can a chance to make a better informed decision. Thank you.
Maggie.
I think the concerns that Mike has expressed about this motion, I think he thinks that it favors large vessels over smaller ones. And I think if you look at the analysis that has been done so far, that doesn't necessarily show for the 50-50 option that was analyzed. On some species, larger boats in the analysis get more, and on others they get less. So I don't think it's a direct one-to-one result of having that formula in. I think what might be, and I think Mike tried to do this originally with his motion, was to try to get some sense of whether or not that particular formula actually captures some general measure of capacity in the fleet, if that particular formula that was put up, because on paper, it does appear, when you do 10 times the length, it does appear to favor larger boats. But I thought I just thought might be a better way to go about it is to, if you could ask the PDT if they think that formula does represent, in general, the capacity of the fleet or not, or what would be a better or a different formula that would express that. Thank you.
Vito?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to take an opportunity to talk about the formula real quickly. This formula was basically boiled down from the buyback. The buyback's a very complex formula that pretty much can be boiled down to 10 to 1. We used three or four different formulas, three of them, I believe, that came from Nero, and one that was used during the point system, and they all stepped up and down very relative to each other. We boiled it down to a simple 10 to 1 for the purposes of allowing fishermen who we were bringing this to and let them understand what it meant so they could simply calculate it. So it was for the purposes of having the most simple way to achieve the same result, relative differences between the permits. We're confident in that. We also, when this was first offered, extended for the PDT to go ahead and look at this, and if they want to use a more scientifically defensible one, it'll have the exact same result in, or not exact, but a very similar result in relative differences, that they could insert or replace that 10 to 1 with one of the three formulas that they already have at Nero that does stuff like this when they're trying to predict you know, different differences in length and horsepower. They also have one with length and tonnage. In this case, it's the length and horsepower. So the buyout formula does a very similar linear movement between permits, but it's much more complex. And fishermen wouldn't be able to understand it when they were trying to understand what we were showing them. So that's the reason why it's shown at 10 to 1 right now. We have no problem with that being replaced, just totally inserted with one of the three formulas that they use. To this motion, there is a very deliberate and distinct difference. You've got to have the length weighted properly against the horsepower. That's the reason for the 10, and then when the narrow complicated ones also do the same thing. So both parameters, either your length or your horsepower, have the right impact on your ultimate value. If you kept them the same, then obviously horsepower would run the whole thing because it's three digits instead of two digits. So it's as simple as that. So I think you're going to have very different results when you just use an A-day and take out the length and horsepower altogether.
Yes, sir.
Austin. I just want to explain the difference between an A-day on a big boat and an A-day on a small boat. And there's a couple of different variations here. If my boat leaves Boston and goes out and fishes in the Gulf of Maine, it's allowed to catch 4,000 pounds on a five-day trip limit, even if it stays 8 days. A small boat fishing as a day boat goes in and out of Newburyport, catches, if they go out and they work 6 hours and they get 800 pounds, they go in, they land the 800 pounds for 6 hours, they go back out, they land the next day, 800 pounds for 6 hours. Land the next day, 800 pounds for 6 hours. The catch there on an 8 day could be a lot more. The capability for when you get into like horsepower and the capability, I mean, it costs more to run a big boat than it does a small boat, of course. I mean, the capability was actually taken away from us, years back when you put the limits in the Gulf of Maine. I mean, you actually spanked the bigger boats. And I was always told if I hung on and stayed in, I'd be rewarded. This ain't rewarding me if you don't include length, horsepower, and, times your 8 day. If you just go by 48 8 days times history, then I'm getting spanked again. I really, I don't agree with Mr. Larry as far as an 8 day. I mean, I fished all my life. I own three boats. I mean, I don't agree with that going straight 8 day times history. His 48-day permit, my 48-day permit, his is going to be worth a lot more than mine's. And, for the only reason is I stayed away from them caught and he didn't. That's what I just wanted to point out. Thank you.
Rich Canastro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Canastro, Illinois City Auction, New Bedford. I just wanted to touch on, we do have a precedence today of the difference of A days between a small boat and a large boat, and you can just look at what it's costing a vessel to lease a day. While small boats, you're seeing $300 a day and up to $1,200, $1,400 a day in a large boat. The investment in a large boat, you're talking $400,000 to $500,000 compared to $200,000. If you think you're going to treat an A day as equal to all, it just doesn't mathematically make any sense. So any of the boats that invested into their future, thousands, if not millions of dollars, and we call all A days as one denominator, it's just not fair. This is the biggest rip-off I've seen in my life. Thanks.
All right, back to the council. Any further discussion? Motion to amend. Any further questions or discussion? Ready for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 2. Oppose? I have 11. Motion to amend fails. With one abstention. Back on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. 13. Opposed. 1 opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries. 13 in favor, 1 opposed, 1 abstention. Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion I'd like to offer. And that would be, I would move that alternative 3 be designated as a sub-option under alternative 2. Furthermore, that the council select alternative 2 as the preferred alternative for calculating the shares allocated to each sector. And with a second, Mr. Chairman, I'd offer my rationale. Okay.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. A little more rationale, please.
The first portion of the motion is so that both alternatives that include history plus capacity are considered as options under one alternative. So to make clear that those two alternatives as they now stand are very similar. And as far as selecting a preferred alternative, compared to history only and to the status quo, the history plus capacity alternatives are more fair and equitable, and they do take into account investments made by industry.
Further discussion. Mike Leary.
I'm not sure we could, well, at least I can't call something preferred if we even had the analysis. So I'm not, I'd oppose a motion for that reason.
Pat Kirkle.
I question, I guess, I'm still a little confused about what it would mean that if you put 3 under 2 and then call 2 preferred, then they're both preferred, in which case, I mean, when you go to make a final decision, you're going to have to split it back out again, and one's going, and they're going to have to be separate alternatives, and one will have to be preferred differently at that point.
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is keep this bus moving, and to make clear what I think, and I think the discussion here has shown that the council is more interested in pursuing a capacity plus history approach to allocation rather than strictly history or the status quo. And I understand that, you know, the motion would basically say that there are two that are preferred, but, you know, I think this is a way to keep it moving. And I know that people are going to say that this is premature, but we are, you know, we are running downhill trying to keep our legs under ourselves right now. And you know, this is a way just to try to keep up with it and give a clearer indication to the industry what direction we're going.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really would have preferred that it were worded a bit differently, but the concept I agree with. So I don't know if you want to try to wordsmith it or. I would change it just to be a motion that the council prefers alternatives that mix history, that mix history with capacity, and just go just that far. Yeah, is that okay? I just think that going two-way and all of that is just getting too complicated. Too late in the day. I can't figure it out.
Sorry, Dave. I was in a sidebar. I'm not sure what you just did.
Well, what I'm trying to do is to the way it was originally worded is very difficult to understand at 4:30 in the afternoon. I just was wondering if it would be all right, Sally, just to change the wording so that what we're saying is that the council prefers alternatives that combine history with capacity than go with just history. That's what we're getting at here.
Instead of motion two, you want to go with motion 2A, so you want to amend?
Well, I think it's a friendly. Yeah, it's a friendly amendment. Just change the wording.
So it's just a friendly emotion. It's a friendly perfection or whatever to the motion you made. Okay. Who else did I have? Jim Salisbury, then Dave Gaethel, then Terry Stockwell.
Well, it's unclear to me what that is. That going meaning to pull out the council select alternative two as the preferred alternative? Is that meant as a... Or are you just being redundant? I mean, I don't quite... This, to me, doesn't perfect the language of the motion. It makes it that much more obscure. The motion yeah. has 2 points in it, and the alternative two, and then alternative two is now bifurcated into two parts, but you're saying alternative two is preferred, but which part of alternative two? So I think that the motion to perfect doesn't do that. Thank you.
What did I say next? Dave Gaethel, and then Terry, yeah. and then Frank.
I mean, I'm sympathetic to the motion, but I think we're going to spend a great deal of time on something that we don't have any business doing at the moment. We haven't had, we just set up a list of alternatives to be analyzed, and now we're saying, before we see any analysis of anything, this is the one we want. Why bother to do the analysis, Lynn? If we're going to do that, let's just skip that step altogether and go straight to this. I mean, this might be appropriate in February, assuming that, Tom's people can somehow pull this analysis together in the next 12 or 14 days. But, I don't know yet. I haven't looked at any of them. I've seen very preliminary analysis today that shows, us something. I'm not even sure what it is yet. I have to go home and figure that out a little bit. But I'm not ready to jump the cart that far off the track this early. Maybe in February I'd be ready for this if we have some more information. I'm certainly sympathetic to it, but I think we got a lot of other things still to do today. Discuss landings, we got a lot of stuff to cover here, and it's already 4:45. So I request that this be withdrawn if possible.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate, Sally, your intent to move forward, but I concur with David. I think we need the full council needs a little bit of time to absorb a lot of the work we've been doing on the committee level. I'd like to see Tom's analysis, and I'd feel much more comfortable about voting on a preferred alternative in February.
Frank.
Yes, thank you. I can't speak for the maker or the seconder of the motion, but I think the intent is here, not so much to say that we prefer this way. It's saying that they don't prefer going with landing's history alone. So it's sending a notification to the industry and to the people in the room that right now there's a feeling that it's going to be something more than just landings. And that's not saying that you're picking a preferred here, so maybe the wording is not quite correct, but what the intent, I believe, is, and like I said, I can't speak for the maker or the seconder, but I think it's saying that we don't intend to pursue a path that is just landings. And I think the committee has been looking at that for probably a year and a half now, or a year anyway. So I think, Sally and Dave are both on the committee. They've been on there that long. So I think that's probably where it's coming from.
Sally?
Yeah, thanks for giving me one more bite at this. we need to get comfortable with making decisions much more quickly than we have in the past. A couple of weeks makes a difference. And while the analysis hasn't been done to the degree that maybe we're accustomed to, going back and forth multiple times between the council and the committee and back and forth and back and forth, we're not going to have the luxury of that in this decision or others related to Amendment 16. So I think, you know, our deliberations are going to have to be a lot faster than they have with this amendment. We're going to have to be making decisions without the, you know, kind of comfort of the back and forth that we've had. So I would urge the council to consider giving the kind of clear indication that industry has been virtually begging for a long time.
Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 4 opposed. The motion that was as perfected fails. All right. The agenda called for an open period for public comment at 1:15. I think this is a natural break to take 15 minutes or less for public comment. If people are in the audience that want to bring something to the council that isn't normally or that isn't on the agenda, this is your time. So please come forward. Tom Osmers. Remember, this is stuff that's not on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Osmers. I even trimmed up for this.